It's wait till next year for the Red Sox, as for the second consecutive season, they're eliminated in the first round of the playoffs. We'll discuss the fallout at Fenway Park. It's Tuesday, October 10th, 2017. I'm Chris Gasper, and this is Season Ticket. Welcome to Season Ticket, a daily podcast from the Boston Globe Sports Department and WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. Today we're going to talk about the Red Sox. They were eliminated from the playoffs. They lose 5-4 in Game 4 of the American League Division Series to the Houston Astros at Fenway Park on Monday. When you look at what happened to them this season, they never really hit their stride this year. I think a lot of people were waiting until the playoffs to see if this team was better than last year's 93-win team. They were by one game. Instead of getting swept, they went down in four. I'm now joined by Boston Globe sports columnist and associate sports editor Dan Shaughnessy. Dan, when I look at this series for the Red Sox, I think ultimately the failure here was that their best players didn't perform their best when it mattered the most. Chris Sale, I think it's not entirely his fault. He did get left in too long in Game 1 when he was charged with 7 earned runs. I thought he got left in too long in Game 4. After 4 scoreless innings of relief, they bring him back out for the 8th. He gives up the tying home run to Alex Bregman. Dustin Pedroia didn't produce. And Craig Kimbrell, he didn't produce either in Game 4. He's been a lights-out closer all year long, but he gives up 2 runs in the game, and it ends up being the difference.
Well, I think that's totally fair. The people that were brought in here to be game changers, to be, you know, pressure situation guys, didn't do it under pressure. And it's collective. I mean, the core hitters, Betts, Bogarts, Pedroia, Bradley, they did very little in the 4 games. The starting pitching, Chris, was unbelievably bad. An aggregate 11.1 innings from 4 starts. Now, we're going to take Pfister and throw him out of there, but Pomerantz, Sale, and Porcello all did very poorly, to put it politely. It's just, it's incredible to me that guys of that caliber, these are guys who are 17 game winners or better, Cy Young candidates, one Cy Young winner, and they can't go 5 or 4 or 3 innings in a playoff game. They got behind in every game because of the starting pitching, and they never recovered from that. Everything else you said was true, including Kimbrell, who should not be off the hook on this, has yet to demonstrate that he can be a pressure pitcher in high-leverage games. His only high-leverage game, he lost the game for him.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, and you're right about the starting pitching. You know, you referenced that 12.71 ERA, and really it started in Game 1 with Sale.
The line at third to 3-1. Up and away with a fastball. He lost him. There's the first walk, and that's going to do it for Chris Sale. Postseason debut does not go well for Chris.
You know, and Sale's their best pitcher. He was the starter you felt most comfortable with. But overall, I didn't like the Red Sox strategy, Dan. I felt like they were pitching backwards in these games, and that their best pitchers oftentimes were coming in relief instead of making a start. For example, you know, the usage of David Price was talked about a lot. Between Game 2 and Game 3, the only game the Red Sox won, Game 3, he threw 95 pitches, and he pitched 2 times in 3 days. If you can do that, to me, you can make a playoff start. And you probably would have lasted longer than Drew Pomerantz if you did. It just frustrated me that they were willing to sort of get down in every game of the series and then say, oh, well, now we're going to put, you know, Price in, our best pitcher. Or now we're going to put, we said Sale couldn't pitch on 3 days rest, but now we're going to have him throw 77 pitches in relief. It just didn't make sense to me. To me, you were playing the game backwards.
No, I think that's all true. And there was an element of panic to the whole strategy right from Game 1 when they benched Hanley Ramirez, who ended up being their best hitter. And you had that tone set right away. And the starting pitchers, as you said, put them behind in every game. I was for Price being a starter going back to September. I thought there was enough time to stretch him out. And as you say, twice in 3 days, 90 pitches. Why can't he start? If he had started, he certainly could have given you more than Pfister gave you 1 inning, Pomerantz 2, and not have you fall behind in these games. I do agree it was backwards. I think people fell in love with the Andrew Miller use by Terry Francona last year, so we're all going to do that. Well, you know what? It didn't work.
And again, I just the contradiction of with Sale, well, we don't want to use him on 3 days rest, which Farrell said, and then you have him come in, and he throws 77 pitches, and he's lights out after 4, and you send him back out there for the 8th. It was kind of, to me, a little bit of shades of Pedro Martinez, Grady Little, 2003 American League Championship Series.
With 115 pitches on the night, Grady Little is going to stick with his starter.
Not unfair, Chris. It was Grady Farrell all the way in this game. And you had 4 good innings. out of sale, but you could see it slipping away in the seventh. He wasn't, the bite wasn't there, the wipeout slider wasn't quite there. And when he came out to start the eighth, I'm like, well, this is a mistake. It wasn't a second guess. It was a first guess.
Two ball, one strike pitch to Bregman. Swung on and hit deep to left field. This ball is back, and this game is tied as Bregman has tagged Chris Sale for a solo home run for the second time in this series. He took a changeup down the left field line, and Chris Sale, who had been dominant out of the bullpen, loses the lead. It's 3-3.
And, Dan, to me, it wasn't just the pitching, too. The lineup. Dustin Pedroia in this series, 2-for-16, no extra base hits, no runs scored, no RBIs, went 0-for-5, obviously made the last out of the series. I know, you know, Dustin's your guy.
Yes.
I know that. We know he was battling a knee injury, one that President of Baseball Operations Dave Dombrowski says he'll have to battle for the rest of his career. But he's the link between the David Ortiz era and the new era with the Red Sox. And frankly, they just needed more from him if they were going to win this series. Like, that's, they're not going to win any series if he performs like that. And, oh, by the way, last year when they got swept, he hit 167.
Yeah, big letdown, and I'm sure he'd be the first to admit that. He knows he's got to do better than that. And he's the only guy, as you reference, who goes back to 2007 when they won and was here in 13, of course, when they won. They got nothing from the guy, and it was kind of an epidemic. He was moved around the lineup. They had him leading off the last day. Bogaerts didn't have a hit until the home run, which led off, you know, hit the first inning for them yesterday. And you know, the in and out of Hanley Ramirez, I still, game one, Nunez is the DH. That set a bad tone right there. And then he blows out his knee going down the line. Hanley comes in and gets two hits and ends up hitting like 700 for the series. And Devin Marrero started in place of Devers in game two.
Great point.
Devers came back and hit two homers in the last two games. And it's clear he has to be in the lineup, as does Hanley. They don't have many guys who scare the other team. Those two do. The notion of a Nunez on a bad knee and a Marrero starting in place of them goes to the same speaking of panic that you talked about when we talked about the pitching.
Yeah, I would agree with that, Dan. And you're absolutely right about Nunez getting the start ahead of Hanley Ramirez and them avoiding Devers in game two, even though he had an OPS over 1,000 against lefties. And then in game three, he hits the home run. Who's he hit it off of? A lefty, Lariano. So I thought there are, again, some situations here where the Red Sox, with decision-making, if you want to put it all on manager John Farrell, or part of it goes on Dave Dombrowski, president of baseball operations, there was some strange decision-making to me here, particularly with the playoff roster. Why was Eduardo Rodriguez on the playoff roster? They used him in one game. He was terrible. Wouldn't you have rather had Brandon Workman or Matt Barnes, yes, or Heath Hembry or somebody like that to be a bridge?
Yeah, those guys got him there all year, and then at the end of the year, this kind of shuffling and panicking and kind of outsmarting yourself, thinking about it too hard, I think that went into it. And they probably thought, well, there might be a situation where Rodriguez needs to start a game. Who knows who would have started game five? I mean, you can go back to that. I mean, I guess they had a plan, and I just, once Sale came into that game on Monday, all bets were off.
Yeah, the other thing that bothered me, and again, I know we've talked about it a lot during this podcast, but you went out and got Addison Reed.
Yeah.
And that was a big move that Dombrowski got. He's supposed to be that bridge to Kimbrel. You get the four scoreless innings from Sale. You mentioned them outsmarting themselves. I think they did outsmart themselves by keeping Sale in the game. And I'm assuming John Farrell's making that call, you know, from the dugout to Gary DeSarcina, who was the acting manager.
Oh, sure.
You know, because Farrell got tossed in the second inning.
They got the Fitbit, Apple Watches. They can do that.
Yeah, there's many ways you can communicate at Fenway Park, as we learned this season. So they make that call. This is why you have Addison Reed. And I think this was one of the downfalls of this team. They never really got comfortable with or found that eighth inning guy, that Mike Timlin, that Hideki Okajima. Because when the money was on the table and their season was on the line, they felt like they had a better opportunity to get through the eighth with a tiring Chris Sale than with the guy that their hand-picked eighth inning setup guy that they went out and acquired at the trade deadline.
Yeah, and that's on Dombrowski. That's why he was brought here. He was used in that role. He was starting to look pretty comfortable in the role. But he got Reed got cuffed around in game one, in garbage time in game one. He did not do well, as that game really got out of hand with him on the mound. So I think that they just said, well, a Sale who's waning is a better bet than a Reed, and we don't know what we're going to get. Because Reed was, he had warmed up in the seventh. He was ready to go.
Yeah, I really thought they should have brought him in. I mean, it's an easy second guess. I think there are a lot of second guesses in this series, but that's one of the downfalls of the Red Sox, the fact that they never really got comfortable with that eighth inning guy. I think another downfall was the inconsistent offense, and I think we saw that again in this series. And you go back, really, they lost 3 out of 4 in this playoff series to Houston. to end the season, they lost 3 out of 4 to Houston. So it's not a fluke. You look at that Houston offense and you look at the Red Sox up, there's no comparison, Dan.
Yeah, Houston can hurt you 1 through 9. In the 7, 8, 9 holes, they can hurt you all throughout, lefty, righty, off the bench. I mean, Beltran knocked in the winning run. This guy's got, you know, like 400 home runs coming in off the bench.
I also think he's 400 years old.
He is, but he teed
like
up a
Yoda.
Ball. He fouled off a bunch of two-strike pitches, a professional at-bat, knocked one off the wall, and that ended up being the winning run. So they were better from top to bottom. I mean, the Sox, one thing we can't sit here, the Sox lost to a better team. Houston was better. We just didn't see the best of the Red Sox. We didn't see the 93-win Red Sox. They folded at the end of the year, as they did last year. That speaks to their attitude, their culture, all these other things. They just don't know how to close out. They don't know how to play in the clutch. They lost 8 of the last 9 last year, 8 of the last 11 this year, and that includes regular season and postseason. That's 16 losses in 20 games at the end of the last 2 years. It's a team that just fizzled at the end in both years.
All right, coming up, we'll continue our requiem for the 2017 Red Sox. We're going to do that by looking to the future. How do you fix this team, and what is the fallout from this first-round playoff loss going to be at Fenway Park? That's coming up next. We're back on Season Ticket, and there are a lot of questions about the future of the Red Sox, none of them bigger than what's going to happen with manager John Farrell. It's entirely possible he managed his last game with the Red Sox, and man, it would be so John Farrell for in his last game as Red Sox manager to get thrown out as he did in the second inning. He was ejected by the home plate umpire.
Wagner trying to walk away, and Farrell holding Pedroia back. Petey's as hot as we've seen him. He is still barking.
Well, Petey's got to be careful. He's got to be smart here.
Now, who's gone? Is it Petey or is it Farrell? One has been ejected.
Yeah, it might have been a bad pitch, but and you're upset about it.
I think it was John that was run. He's still out there barking at Wagner.
You have to give Farrell credit for this, Dan Shaughnessy. When he does something, when he makes a move, he goes all out. And so he definitely went all out. It's usually pretty memorable. There are a lot of memorable moves. Even, you know, I'm thinking back, even during the regular season in the clinching game, when he decided to keep David Price in and Addison Reed starts running out of the bullpen.
Yes.
Because he thinks he's come. Even though John, you know, manager John never signaled for Reed, but Reed was so sure he was coming in. And just the look on Farrell's face, it's like, to me, that is absolutely the epitome of John Farrell's stint as Red Sox manager.
Right, and there was something symbolic about him being ejected in the last game, because it could be that he's ejected in the offseason as well, which is unfair, and he did win 3 titles and all that stuff. They are going to need a scapegoat. They're going to need some action, and the ownership group in this team wants some sizzle, some splash, and I think firing the manager is certainly an easy way to go and say, hey, everybody loved Jason Varitek as a player. Let's put him in the corner office. People love him. You know, the same way they do with the auditions for the Nesson booth. So I wouldn't be surprised if that's done. That's largely optics. I mean, I think it probably needs to be done, but it doesn't fix everything. That's going to be the thing that people need to remember when they do change managers. You haven't fixed everything.
I do think that Farrell has a tendency to oversell things and overthink things. But when I look at it, ultimately, this is on the players.
It's true. It is on the players. It's always on the players. They probably will change manager, but they need to address this clubhouse, which went awry. It made a left turn this year and never recovered. And you can go back to multiple episodes. The Manny Machado thing was mishandled in Baltimore when they didn't know how to retaliate for their player getting hit on the base paths, and they totally ham-handed that situation. And then that leads into the David Price episode, insulting a Hall of Famer on the plane, Dennis Eckersley, no one apologizing for it, players applauding over this behavior, and designating David Price as the leader of this team. Well, when David Price is your leader, you get the kind of October performance that we just saw, which is people not doing what they usually do at the end of the year. And that happened throughout the lineup. It happened with the pitchers. And this team was a very stubborn team with an attitude of, this is how we do things. This is how we run the bases.
You know, that was the worst.
We're aggressive. You know, they confused aggressiveness and stupidity. You know, they're not the same thing.
Aggressiveness and recklessness.
Yeah, it was just so. And you know, that wasn't Moreland's fault yesterday getting thrown out at home plate. It was Bruce, you know, the third base coach sent him. But that was their mentality all year, and they ended up with 30 guys thrown out at home plate. They led the majors in all categories with that. But this attitude of stubbornness, even with the Apple Watch thing, it's like, oh, this is funny. You know, this is how we do things. We didn't do anything different. Yeah, they did. They used electronics to cheat. You know, that was a little different. Guys came up short at the end, and I think that the Sox need to address the clubhouse culture, why they have these players that aren't getting better and don't do well at the end of the year. And that would be Betts, Bogarts, Bradley, the whole core. And that's a problem.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, your point, what you're saying is there's a leadership issue in there, which would point to both the players in the clubhouse, but also the manager.
Yep.
You know, if the manager allows somebody like David Price, and this is the thing I hated about this season, the fact that whether it's John Farrell, Dave Dombrowski, Sam Kennedy, John Henry, nobody stepped up and told David Price, you yep. must apologize to Dennis Eckersley. That never happened. And you got the sense a little bit from the Red Sox this year with Farrell that it was the inmates running the asylum.
Absolutely.
And when you let a guy like Price, who has had his issues here, right? I mean, I'll be honest with you. I don't like the Eckersley thing, but I also think Price got a little bit of a bum rap here. He won 17 games last year, just like Chris Sale did. And I was saying back in May when people were anointing, you know, Chris Sale, they were ready to give him a statue outside Fenway Park. I said, let's see what he does in October, because isn't that the litmus test? Isn't that how we judged Price? And I think there is a little bit of a double standard there.
Chris, that's totally fair. I think if you look back at David Price in his first year, he was 17-9, lost his playoff game. Chris Sale came in, went 17-8, lost his playoff game. Actually, lost two of them. So I don't know which way you want, why Price gets crushed and Sale is revered. That's a fair point for David Price fans, and it's there's truth to that.
But that being said, obviously what went on with Eckersley, that's the other side of it. And it was funny. Do you think David Price at all changed the narrative of his relationship with Red Sox fans by the way he pitched in the postseason? If there's any, the Red Sox were losers in this series, obviously. But if there's any one person who walked out of this a winner, isn't it David Price?
On the field, David Price had the best playoff of any Red Sox player. And fans loved him when he, you know, contributed so heavily in that big win on Sunday. So, yes, I think he redeemed himself on the field with that. But after the game, he wouldn't even say he noticed the fans or wouldn't acknowledge the fans. He's mentally out of here. He doesn't like it here. He doesn't like us. He doesn't like the fans. He likes his teammates, and that's what it's about for him now.
So that leads us to sort of the future of the Red Sox. Price will be on the team, we assume, next year as an opt-out after 18. But when you look at a team that's really built to win now, I think they have a three-year window when you look at some of this stuff. Price's opt-out. Kimbrel can be a free agent after the 2018 season. Drew Pomerantz can be a free agent after 2018. And then after 2019, you know, Sale can be up and Xander Bogaerts can be up. So they have a window here. They've burned one of the 3 years of the window. How much do they need to change the complexion of this team moving into next year? And are you down for bringing in a big name, which the Red Sox, we know they love big names.
Yes.
Like Giancarlo Stanton.
I am down for that. I think Dave Dombrowski will be down for that. They need home runs. They need sizzle. They need people to like the team again. And he solves those issues. And don't forget, Dombrowski is a win-now guy. He comes into places, trades away all the prospects, and tries to win now. It hasn't happened for him. He's won one championship in 40 years. But the Sox, as you say, the window is closing on them. And I think bringing Stanton in, if you have to give up some more pieces for the future, you do that. You pay the big dough. Bring in the star. See if you can change what just happened.
See, I disagree. I think bringing in Stanton, in this case now, it's like having a couple of pops, right? It takes the edge off, you feel better, and then when it's all said and done, you wake up with a headache. I don't think this guy could function in this market. He had a great season, 59 home runs, but that's when he's on the field. He gets hurt all the time, and what has Giancarlo Stanton ever won? He's going from an extremely low-pressure environment in Miami, where I'm not even sure they know they have a baseball team, to the bubbling cauldron of negativity that is the Boston baseball experience. I don't think that's going to go very well. And I'll tell you what, our colleague Peter Abraham, who was down there at the All-Star game this year in Miami, when you think Stanton would be happy, he's basically the All-Star Game ambassador, said that Stanton was surly like the whole weekend. If he's not happy then, and he's dealing with the media then, what's it going to be like when he comes here, Dan, and you walk up to his locker
Perfect.
2 months into the season, and you're asking him about a strikeout or some issue or something that he said, he's going to want out of here so fast?
He and David Price will be a little club of two, the guys who played in Florida and did their thing and then came up here and had trouble. Bring him on, I say, absolutely, bring him on.
Look, it's a 93-win season. We don't want to act like it's a disaster.
Thank you.
But this is Boston, and you're judged by what you do in the postseason. That's what we do with the Patriots. I think that's also what we did with the Celtics. So we're just holding the Red Sox to the same standard here. And when you lose in the first round in back-to-back years, there's clearly something that needs to be done, something that needs to change somewhere along the line for you to get to be the type of team you want to be. Dan, great baseball talk as always. Thanks for joining us.
The day after is always fun around here.
Finally, a segment we call The Cheap Seats. The only thing worse than the Red Sox season being over is knowing that the Yankees season is still going. The New York Yankees extended their season on the same day that the Red Sox season came to an end. They beat the Cleveland Indians to force a deciding fifth game on Wednesday. It's interesting because coming into this year, all the talk was about the Red Sox young core, but it's the Yankees young core that's still playing in October. It's funny how quickly things can change in a baseball season, but some things never seem to change, which is the Yankees getting the best of the Red Sox. Well, that's it for this Red Sox postmortem edition of Season Ticket. If you liked us, be sure to tell a friend and subscribe on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher. To find out more about this podcast, go to wbur.org/seasonticket. For more great sports stories, subscribe to the Boston Globe. Season Ticket is a production of WBUR Radio and the Boston Globe. Thanks for listening. I'm Chris Gasper. We'll see you tomorrow.